It has been reported that 47% of Gen Z youth have made a decision to commit their life to Jesus Christ. That's amazing statistic. And Young Life is an organization that's been around for many, many years. In fact, they're celebrating their 80th anniversary this year. We'll be talking with Ken Tankersley, who is Young Life's Senior Vice President, on this particular portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and Ken, thank you so much for joining us. It's great to have you.
No, thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Those not familiar with Young Life, tell us about that, the organization itself, and then we'll get into this amazing statistic.
Well, like you said, Young Life has been around for 80 years now. Our birthday was just this past October, and it's an outreach ministry. We're all over the globe and all around the U.S. and 104 countries around the globe. The sweet spot for Young Life is working in partnership with churches, but identifying kids who, for lack of better words, would never darken the doors of a church. So it's a Christian meeting for non-Christians. We're there towards finding and identifying disinterested kids. And as we enter into the third generation of unchurched kids, that's easier and easier to find.
By the way, one of the most famous persons that was involved at any time with Young Life, to me, is famous. Jeb Stuart Magruder worked with the Nixon administration, even went to prison and so forth, but reported a conversion experience like Colson, although Colson's experience was before he went to prison. But I remember Jeb Stuart Magruder, they mentioned Young Life, that had been very influential for him during that difficult time in his life.
Well, that would be true to form. I mean, our desire is to simply, our mission statement is to introduce adolescents to Jesus Christ, which by its very definition is folks who do not know anything about Jesus. So it's such a great privilege to work in that space and then to help them grow in their faith. So many students, so many individuals see their spiritual or religious life is being compartmentalized. Okay, I need to fit God into my life. And as you know, it couldn't be more, the reality couldn't be any more different, that your life is your life in Christ. So helping somebody during the adolescent years navigate how does my life look in Christ is a great honor.
All right.
And should exist for a lifetime.
All right. So tell us about this new statistic that I started the program with. First of all, let's define what is Gen Z.
Yeah, Gen Z is the generation of students that we're working with now. Interestingly for us, at any given moment, you know this, you have five different generations in the culture. So Gen Z is our adolescent generation, if you will. For Young Life, what's interesting is millennials, that's our young staff. The average staff person is 24 to 27 years old. And then you have Gen X, boomers, and the builder generation going all the way up to seniors and 80 years old or what have you. So Gen Z is what we've talked about a little bit in different conversations I've had. That's the activist generation. These are students who are very emotive. They lead with their emotions, so they identify with what we're seeing with social platforms and other things. They're actually cultural theologians in ways where they're identifying brokenness or wrong in the world, and they want to see a change there. So for the believer, this is a hopeful posture because we have a role to play in helping them understand how true change and transformation can happen, not only in the world that they see, but in their lives as well. So,
and the age
today, students.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say the age of Gen Z is what, roughly? How old are they?
It's probably up to the age of 18, 19. So college age and down, about a 15-year window and generational breakdowns.
So about 18 to 24 is Gen Z, about.
No, probably 10 to young, 8 to 22 or something like that, yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, I see. All right, I appreciate that. Now, where do you get this statistic that supposedly 47% of this generation, 8 to 22, in modern America, you're saying, have supposedly accepted Christ?
Yeah, that's from the Barna Report, and that's a drop from previous years, but like for yourself and for me, that's a hopeful posture. I think there are three questions that most students are asking, and it is God there? It's question number one. And second one is, does God care? If God is out there, is God personal? Does he care? Does he care about me? And then thirdly, and it's a little bit self-centered, but it is the third question, is what do I do with that? Do I care? How does that play into my life? And I think regardless of the generation, kids change every 2 weeks. Fashions change constantly. The pandemic has brought about additional change, or at least revealed several things. But what we've seen in our 80-year history is some of the tried and true elements of adolescence are still there. Kids are curious. They long to be known. They want to know. They ask, when given a chance, they ask all the big questions in life. And if you put them in a place where they can stop and pause and ponder and question and ask those questions, the realization that close to 50% would say, yeah, I think there's a God, that's not surprising to me. Now, what they do with that, how they let God pursue them and how they pursue him and what a life of faith looks like, now that's the real work. That's discipleship.
Huh. Okay. As far as this 47% statistic, I'm still kind of hung up on it because where are these people? I don't see these people. I mean, when I look at the news and so forth, or I see a lot of, you know, young people today, I see a lot of people that are very confused. I see Antifa in the streets. I guess that would be older people. But you see a lot of the unrest, and you just see, man, you're telling me a lot of these people are Christians?
Yeah, Jerry, that's very insightful. I mean, one of the things that we've seen is the question that students are asking now is different than the questions that students were asking, let's say, 30 or 40 years ago. 30 or 40 years ago, they may have asked, is Christianity true? These are things that birthed everything from classic Christian apologetics, evidence that demands a verdict, a case for Christ, other books or different publications of the sort. But the question that kids are asking now is not, is Christianity true? Perhaps you could even win that argument, but their question, what's more prominent for them, is Christianity good? Is it good? Meaning, what they see when they look out the window, much like what you just articulated, they're not sure what brand of Christianity they want to align with, or that they agree with things. And as you know, we've lost some of the ability of things like civil discourse. Our subtle change to that conversation and that question is, like for me, my life of faith didn't start because I aligned with Christianity, or that it was true or good. I'd like to think both of those answers are yes, but what I aligned with was, is Jesus true? And is Jesus good? And when you have that conversation, it's way more exciting. It's a little bit easier to navigate, and it can help them navigate the challenges that you've already articulated looking outside the world. Evangelicalism has taken a hit in the last few years, and that's a challenge for sure. But the hope that we're seeing, it may not be revival, but it could be renewal, you know, where we're getting back to the true essence of our faith, our Christian faith, and our spirituality. I'd like to think that.
Huh. What about the issue of, like, gender confusion? I mean, this is just, it's unbelievable that people in our culture today are being persecuted if you actually believe that there's only two genders, but biologically and scripturally, there's only two genders.
Yeah. Well, it goes without saying, we're in a very confusing state sexually as a culture, whether it be the role that pornography has played, not just with the adolescent world, but with the church over the last several decades now, or you just articulated with LGBTQ plus kind of conversations and issues and how to care for all people groups. And then even with teenagers and in the space where we work, it's adolescents going all the way up to college age students. And social scientists sometimes say that adolescence has stretched beyond the college years, 21, let's say, to 20, 25 and older. And hookup culture there, transactional relationships, it is very challenging. I'd say it's always been challenging, but maybe more so now than ever before. And to be a group of people to be able to walk with students as they navigate that world and are able to talk respectfully about those issues is needed now more than ever.
Now, some of this again, going back to this statistic, 47%. Yes, I'm sure. I'm fixated on it because it just seems so, it's crazy. You might as well tell me that, you know, Martians have landed or something. I mean, again, when I see the culture at large, how could this possibly be? Are some of these 47% unchurched kids, and yet they claim to have a personal relationship with Jesus, but they're not affiliated with any particular church?
I don't know how they would articulate it. I once asked Philip Yancey a question along these same lines. I, with Young Life, we're students of the culture and we're students of students. Philip Yancey is an author and he lives just a few minutes away from me, is a student of the culture and he's a student of the church. And I asked him, I said, what are the avenues that to reach the secular world, the non-believing world? And he said primarily two things. I thought it would take him much longer to find an answer, but he did it immediately. And he said, I see the non-believing world turn their head and take notice when two things happen. First, he said, when non-believers are faced with beauty, they don't know what to do. I said, what do you mean by beauty? And he said, all kinds. A Colorado mountain, the birth of a child, music or poetry, a sunset, beauty, natural revelation, essentially. The second thing he said is when a non-believer sees a believer serve, they also don't know what to do. The motivation is affected there. I think those still continue to be two strong avenues that we can have with this community. So does a non-Christian kid acknowledge that there's a God? Yes. Have they prayed a prayer or do they know what that means in its fullness? Pretty good chance that that's not the case. But that's also probably not the case for a lot of the population at any given moment. Life of faith is a decision for sure, but it's also a journey much more. You know that. And if it starts in high school or junior high or a college age student, then we're delighted to walk with them during that time.
Okay, we have 1 minute to wrap up. Anything else you want to say?
Well, I do think as believers, we have to be the most sober ones in the room. We have to have a sober assessment of what we see out in the culture. And you've articulated that beautifully, and I would agree with you. In the same way, we have to go forward with a hopeful posture. My prayer is one of renewal. There's things in this space that as a church, in the broadest sense, we can learn. There's things we can offer. There's certainly places that we can serve. One of the things that I've seen that's happened in the midst of the pandemic has caused some things, that's true, but it's revealed more things than it's caused. And I think it provides an opportunity for us going forward. And I think that's where we all have to find a place to be and find an area to serve.
All right, Ken Tankersley, again, Young Life, younglife.org for more information. Thank you so much, Ken, for being with us. All the best.
Jerry, thank you for having me.